Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, a show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives on the world's leading global brands. Today we're joined by Tracy Cote, Chief People Officer at StockX and author of the Wall Street Journal best-selling book, People Operations. Welcome to the show, Tracy. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to see you again. How have you been, first and foremost?
Great, actually. The weather out here in California where I live has been pretty nice in the non-fire zone area, so I've been enjoying a little bit of that.
Fantastic. And how have you been settling in to the new role?
Well, you know, new jobs are always very busy, but it's been a great experience and lots of fun stuff to do. And StockX is an amazing company, so I feel very fortunate to have landed there.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it was like a few weeks before we spoke that my friend Colin, who's probably listening, who's a massive fan of the organization, buys tons of stuff on the website. He was like, you got to check out this site called StockX. You can get this there, you can get that, and there's all these cool things. And we're like, this is amazing. And literally 2 weeks later, we're chatting. But you've really built a strong brand and fan base over in the UK. But for people that aren't aware of the organization, give them a bit of background.
Well, okay, great. StockX is basically the leading global e-commerce marketplace for people who want to consume current culture. So the focus is really on the online resale marketplace for sneakers. And I confess I have about 16 pair now when I didn't have any before I started working there. Apparel, accessories, collectibles, and everything we sell is actually new.
Yeah.
So it's a really fun brand, and people who are looking to consume current culture, this is the platform where they go to do that.
Yeah. And what I love about it, it's just ever evolving with what's happening in pop culture. So like the organization is always going to be fresh and vibrant as well. So that's a really cool part of it.
For sure. And one of the interesting things about it is people see it as an investment. So yes, for me, I buy the shoes because I want to wear them. Other people are investing in them as assets and mm-hmm. things they can resell later as they appreciate in value over time. It's
really interesting. I'm not going to lie. I've got a few friends that have got some ceiling to wall rooms full of trainers that are like, it's an investment. And some of them are worth crazy amounts of money, and I'm like, how much a day worth now? So yeah, there's young entrepreneurs and even kids making, you know, businesses out of doing this as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I actually met one of our, we call them power sellers, you know, people who do a lot of trading on our platform, and, you know, 19-year-old guy. Wow. Right out of high school and has a full business with employees and a warehouse. It's amazing. If you're entrepreneurial and you are interested in investing in this asset class, there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Definitely. Well, tell everyone a little bit more about you personally and your journey to where we are today at StockX.
Sure. So I've been in the HR field for many, many years, probably about 20 years at this point. I'm dating myself, and in companies everywhere from retail to financial services to digital marketing and to technology, which is where I found myself the last few years. And StockX is an amazing kind of hybrid of all of that, right? It's a tech company, but it also has this e-commerce aspect. So I find that I can bring all of the things from my experience together in one place from a people perspective. And so I'm really having a lot of fun with the cultural aspect of StockX and bringing together this sort of tech side and the e-commerce side and melding those things together personally to just create a very inclusive environment for our team members and to continue to support the great values that were already in place when I got there.
Yeah, amazing. Could you talk more about how you're scaling the HR function to support such a fast-growing organization?
Yeah, for sure. So I personally look at it as a pyramid with kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you start at the bottom and the foundation, you go up. I actually worked on a book with Jay Fulcher and Kevin Marasco, who I worked with at Zenefits, and we created a model, which is very similar, a sort of a step model. And you really have to start with the foundational items. It might be pretty chaotic when you first walk into a startup or any kind of business. Sometimes businesses just grow so fast, things get a little chaotic. So you need systems and foundations and structures. So a lot of what I'm doing is making sure, along with my team, that we have all of those foundations in place so we can grow and scale. So that's implementing an HRIS system, making sure our ATS applicant tracking system is working well, making sure we have policies and processes and a communications hub for our employees so they know where to find stuff. It's a lot.
Yeah, I bet. I tend to see, not everyone, but and you know, I've done over 500 episodes nearly of this podcast, that some CHROs or chief people officers who come from large multinationals into a startup really struggle. Have you seen that as well? Or is it, it seems to be a theme of many, not everyone, but some of them seem to kind of struggle. Why is that? You know, what are some of the sort of challenges that you've faced along that that others can avoid, or hurdles that they can avoid along the way?
You know, that's a great point. And I think it tends to be true. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's about the person and what are they interested in doing? What are they willing to do? But I think when you work at a big company, you're used to having a lot of resources at your disposal and a lot of systems and processes that are already fully baked and high functioning and built for you. So you can come in and be strategic and fine tune and improve. When you walk into a startup or when you find yourself in a company that grows exponentially fast, you have to build. And so you have to have that combination of being able to be strategic and see a few years ahead to sort of decide where you need to go. But then you have to backtrack and figure out how are we going to get there? And a lot of that is very foundational work. And I think people who haven't had to build will struggle with that. I do believe you're either a builder, you're an optimizer, or a maintainer. And builders generally are attracted to startups. And if you come to a startup and you're not prepared to build, you're not going to like it.
Because you're very hands-on, right? Whereas in some of those organizations, they've probably got these huge teams, all of these resources, they're not having to be as hands-on, right? Day-to-day operationally.
Absolutely hands-on, as well as maybe having to really learn how to prioritize effectively. In a big company with lots of money, you can have everything you want. You can hire fancy consultants. You can hire companies to come in and do all of the things for you. In a smaller company, you have to make some trade-offs. You don't get to do everything. So you pick what's the most value for the money and the time and the opportunity to make my team member or my employee experience going to be a great one. Mm-hmm. So you can't have all of the things. You have to sort of pick some of the things. And that's also hard if you're from a big company. You're used to having everything you need. Maybe not always, but I've always worked at small and mid-sized companies.
Yeah, so you're used to it now. It's like a muscle. Yeah, I realized when I started this company that, you know, I was like, who's doing that? I was like, oh, me. Who's doing marketing? Me, operations, finance, production. And I was like, no one told me this. This part of it, when I was going to start a company, that I'll be wearing so many hats, and you have to have that continuous learning mindset. Every day I'm learning something new, failing forward as well. But it's not for everyone. And I realized that. You mentioned earlier about building out your HR technology stack, you know, your ATS, HRIS. What are some of the questions or considerations that people should have when approaching this? Because it's a bit of a minefield. There's so many new companies popping up in all the different spaces. You know, they're all claiming they can solve all your problems. What are some of the questions that you ask vendors, or that you consider, considerations you have before going in and making a decision?
Well, I think you need to assess kind of where you're at, and you have to meet the company where they're at. It never works if you're an HR professional and you walk into an organization with this idea that you want to implement corporate social responsibility and 360 review programs when people aren't getting paid correctly, right? So you have to definitely sort of do an assessment to see where is your organization at and what's their appetite for different kinds of programs. You know, I always prioritize with the systems. You know, get system savvy, digitize and automate everything you can, make sure your data is clean. And then you want to focus on driving a great employee experience. So in your company, what does that look like? It looks different in every company. There's no one size fits all. And some of that includes things like CSR or diversity and inclusion. So once you start to get those team member engagement sort of programs in place to drive a great experience, then you can focus on being more data driven and bringing those insights from all that great data and all those team member experiences you're driving into your future decisions.
Yeah. Is that even more important in a smaller company with not, you know, they have big teams, tons of resources? Because one of the things that myself and Shane, my co-founder, did as early on as possible is automate everything. so we could focus our time and energy working with the team, as opposed to doing sort of administrative tasks. So we kind of automate everything as possible. we've got an API for everything in the organization.
I love that. I mean, I think being more data driven, no matter what size company you are, is always a good thing, because you're going to get insights out of that data that you otherwise might be guessing at, and you might have been right at, and you might not have been right. So if you can measure it, you know, metrics do matter, and they're ultimately going to drive better business outcomes, depending on what it is. I mean, the price of admission is basic headcount, turnover, hiring statistics. But as you get a little more sophisticated, you can look at your diversity and inclusion statistics. What does tenure look like for people of color or for women? You know, things like that, to get you really to the next level. Mm-hmm.
Talking about diversity, talk about the importance of DE&I initiatives in the workplace and some of the work that you're doing yourself.
Yeah, you know, I feel very lucky that I walked into a company where more than 40% of our total workforce and about a quarter of our leaders at the sort of director and above level are people who identify as diverse in some way, shape, or form, right? People of color. So we view diversity as a great strength, but it doesn't mean there isn't a lot of work to still be done there to continue to nurture inclusion and encourage more diversity. So a couple of things. So in our workforce, we actually have a large workforce who reside in our authentication centers. So if you want to buy a pair of sneakers or a Gucci watch or whatever it is, and somebody's selling it, it passes through our authentication center to be authenticated and packaged. And
oh, really? So someone actually goes in, and so that's a really, that set of skills is very niche. So you have someone who can say, this is a real Rolex based on X, Y, and Z. Is that how it works?
Yes, absolutely. Wow. We have a lot of people who do that literally all over the world.
Very specialists.
Authentication centers all over the world. So here in London, we have an authentication center in London. We can get you a tour if you want, but you go there, the product goes from the seller to the authentication center to the buyer. So we make sure that
it's real,
because we don't want you to buy something that's fake. I mean, that's of course, the whole thing. It's authentication. So anyway, so we have all these people who are in the authentication centers, and it's a great source of future talent for moving around throughout the organization and into the sort of tech company side of the organization. So we have programs where we're trying to empower frontline workers to invest in career development, skills training, and advancing what we call our frontline team members. We have an engineering program we're creating where we're just starting this, where we're designing a program to help people interested move into engineering roles. Actually, we're going to train them, grow our own talent, which I think is great. And then, of course, we're forming employee resource groups, which we call team member resource groups. And we're also bringing in some corporate social responsibility activities this year, which will tie into the initiatives embraced by our resource groups. Mm-hmm. So the three we're starting would be for women, Black team members, and for LGBTQ.
Wow. It's so cool because you have such a diverse range of products that are sold on the website, and you mentioned those authenticators. Naturally, you're going to attract a diverse pool of talent. Is that true? And I'm just throwing that out there. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a diverse marketplace too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Our partners and our brand. And
yeah.
So it does attract a diverse range of people just generally interested in the brand, for sure.
Yeah, so cool. How has the current climate impacted the work that you do? Or has it?
What do you mean?
I mean, in terms of COVID, everything else going on, because I've seen more and more of my friends using the site. So is that a trend that you're seeing now? People, obviously, they couldn't buy it face-to-face, so they kind of look to online resources as well, but also they're following pop culture. So it seems perfectly on trend.
Well, you know, I think in some ways the concern was that because people couldn't go out, maybe people would shop less, but that hasn't proven to be the case. Our business has actually grown pretty exponentially during the past 18 months. So I don't think that it has hurt our business. And in fact, if anything, I would say consumers are more and more drawn to online.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Commerce, e-commerce more than ever, because bricks and mortar, it's harder or more dangerous or more risky to go to a bricks and mortar store, and you get much wider variety of choice when you shop online.
Yeah, you're right. It's so true now. Back to your D&I initiatives. I know you've got so much planned on there, but what's been the biggest challenge for you in rolling this out? Because many companies are obviously have a huge focus in this space, but it's not easy.
Well, you know, I consider myself fortunate. When I came here, we already had a vice president of DEI, and she's great. Her name's Marlon Williams. And so she'd already started some of these initiatives, and I'm helping support them. But we had been doing what we called candid conversations. So these are company-wide discussions about important, some of these timely, vulnerable topics to help make sure our employees are heard and feel supported. She'd already had quite a few of the initiatives in place that were leading us to forming the employee resource groups. We had a diversity council involving a lot of team members, a lot of voices, a lot of initiatives, too many to count going on to support it. So I feel like because the company already had such a strong commitment to DEI, even before it became, I think, sort of fashionable to do that, we're in a good spot.
Yeah, fantastic. Great to hear. What about community? Because one of the big challenges I'm hearing from your colleagues is building community in this digital world, digital environment that we find ourselves in. How are you building community at StockX?
Community is actually one of my sort of areas of passion around HR. DEI is a big part of that for sure. And the whole team member experience is a big part of that as well. If people feel like they're having a good onboarding experience and a good team member experience, open conversations with their manager, they're going to feel more engaged and more like they're part of something bigger. So I think there's a variety of things. In addition to the DEI kind of activities and the CSR kind of corporate social responsibility kinds of activities, there's a lot of communication related activities that happen. So some are company-wide, all hands. We do something called Cut to the Chase, which is every week our CEO and most of our executives get on a Zoom or a Google Meet call, and employees just ask questions. It's like an ask me.
I love it. Cut to the Chase says it all in the name.
Right. And you know, sometimes the questions are hard and you're like, oh, how am I going to answer this? But it's very
anonymous. Anonymous questions. Are they anonymous, the questions?
No. People.
Okay.
People just ask the questions. It's the kind of, there's no repercussions.
It's part of the culture, right? It feels safe. You have this, you've kind of built the trust and psychological safety where people can ask, which is great.
Exactly. And then in our warehouses, we've built our authentication centers. We've built these communication hubs with various screens with different information on them. And then we're working on a specialized intranet portal that will be mobile friendly so everybody can access that. So there's just a lot of different, we use Slack like a lot of people do. So there's various channels on Slack to keep people engaged for different kinds of interests. I just found out there's a pet channel. I didn't know the pet channel.
Hey, like, wow, missing out.
Pet channel.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
And these things are everything ranging from business specific interests to personal interests, like the pet channel. So a wide variety of opportunities for people to connect and engage. And I think as we come out of COVID, hopefully we see a light at the end of the tunnel somewhere here. I think we'll be more mindful about how we gather, when we gather, why we gather, and what do we want to get out of those meetings rather than just being next to each other, just to be next to each other. Let's have a purpose for our gathering. So I think we're thinking about ways to be more mindful about that.
Mm-hmm. Before COVID, what was the current setup? Was it everyone in the office and then you have the centers? Or was there already a big part of the population that worked 100% remote? What was the setup beforehand?
No, it was very much a headquarters-centric kind of focus, like so many tech companies. Detroit is our headquarters, and there's a lot of pride in being a company that's heart is based in Detroit. But we are also now global, and we've got offices in, Hong Kong and in London and in Australia and Melbourne, and I'm trying to remember where they all are, in Japan, South Korea. We've got offices everywhere. So as a global company, it needs to be a little more globally focused, and that means a lot for our tech workers anyway. They can really work from anywhere, and they are.
And for yourself, does that mean that you haven't really met most of the team yet?
I have not met a lot of people, although I have done a little, I confess I've done a little travel. I've been to all of our US Authentication Centers already, and I've been to Detroit several times, so I've met a few people, but it is weird onboarding in a pandemic, because I live in San Francisco Bay Area, and a lot of my colleagues do not.
So you're onboarding people in London, basically all over the world, right? As well. So how's that bit experience been for you, employing people during this time all over the world remotely, 100% remote, not seeing anyone? What's that experience been like for you and the team?
For me personally, it's not a big deal. Coming from a company previously that was very global, when I was at Genesis, we had people in 58 countries. I was used to hiring people over the phone. I did a lot of it. I had a very big team, and they were all over the world, and I couldn't always have the luxury of seeing them in person. So for me, it's pretty normal. I think for a lot of people, it's an adjustment. But I think everybody's getting so used to being on video for all of their meetings. We're all becoming a lot more comfortable with it. I actually just brought in our vice president of talent acquisition purely virtually. We haven't met in person yet. We're going to meet in person for the first time next week. But, and it is definitely different, something to get used to.
It almost seems, because a lot of the my young friends and family members that are coming into the workplace now, for them, they don't know any different. So it's just how it is.
Well, I experienced something very interesting. I actually went to a board meeting recently, and I ran into another colleague, and we looked at each other and we're like, have we met in person or not? We couldn't remember because we see each other on video so much, it feels like we know each other in person.
But isn't that true? Is it like I've met some people recently as well that I've known for a couple of years now virtually, and when you meet, it just feels like you know each other. I never expected that.
Because you do.
No, and do you know what I mean? Like you've never met each other, but it's so normal. I think the only difference is we had a team getaway recently, and what you don't realize is the height of people. So there were certain people that are like, oh, you're a lot taller than I thought you were, or you're a lot smaller than I thought you were. Because I think that's about it. That's the only difference.
I get that a lot, actually. I get a lot of, wow, you're short. I'm only 5'2", so I get that all the time.
How do they bring that one up? That's a bit of a tough one to bring up. Well, again, you've got that culture, you can have a bit of fun, right? So
There's not a lot of platform sneakers out there, but I'm looking for all of them.
I bet. I bet. Have you got like a dedicated room now for all you? Have you got like extra room in the wardrobe now for the new sneaker collection?
It is starting to take up a lot of space, though, I'm not going to lie.
What are you most excited about moving forward? It's such an exciting organization. You're doing so much incredible work internally.
The thing I'm most excited about is doing everything I can to really help the company scale. The growth has been astronomical. StockX is an amazing brand. I think it's very popular from a sort of almost a subculture perspective. I would love to do everything I can to support this to be just truly a global brand that everybody knows and respects and trusts. So for me, that is making sure I do all of the things on the people experience front, from the foundational systems to developing a smooth people operations function that supports our team member base to driving a great candidate and employee experience. That will be success for me. And it's a lot of things that go into that.
It sounds like it's not, it doesn't sound easy. What advice would you give to other leaders that are considering moving then from, a large organization to a startup? We spoke about a little about it earlier, but what would be your main piece of advice?
I think, for people moving from a larger organization to a smaller organization, I think you just have to take it first of all, make sure you have the right mindset to do it, right? Understand that it will be a heavy lift, no doubt, and a combination of both operational and strategic, and just hire the right people around you who are smart strategic thinkers who can also roll up their sleeves and get stuff done, and then have a plan. You know, and that's one of the reasons we wrote the book, was to help people devise a plan for a smaller company, to know what to tackle and in what order and how to get things done. So I would say, you know, pick up my book or pick up any book, pick up a model and like follow a plan. And you can't go wrong.
Yeah. Do you think, because I think I've heard you speak about this before, do you think that HR needs a rebrand?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And you've heard me probably in this conversation go back and forth multiple times. I say HR because that's what people kind of know. I've rebranded my team to be People Experience with an X, because, you know, it's StockX.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And People Operations is a big part of that. And that's, you know, anything that's kind of going around the word people is People Experience, People Operations, People in Culture, People in Talent. You're hearing a lot of that in the sort of HR world. And I think HR is going through an evolution. I don't really want to say an identity crisis. I think it's an evolution where it's time to level up HR. And what does that look like? And it might look a little different in different companies. But at the end of the day, I think what is happening is as HR teams, people teams everywhere learn how to automate the stuff they can automate, the next frontier is how do you level up that employee and candidate experience? So all of the people who are kind of associated with your brand, whether as employees, as candidates, even as customers, have a great experience. And a lot of that's up to the people in charge of the people. So I think that's why you see a lot of different words floating around there as HR folks try to sort of figure out what is that next step in our development and evolution look like. For me, it looks like people experience. And for many, it's people operations. It's definitely all the same thing. It's driving a great experience and thinking about setting that foundation to support your employees.
Yeah, definitely agree. And is that also one of the things that you always talk about? Sorry, I stalked you on LinkedIn a little bit, but you always talk about demystifying HR. Is that one of the things that you refer to relate to that?
I do. You know, I think there's this historical sort of idea that HR people hoard all this knowledge and it's very secretive and we have all this power. I'm here to disabuse everyone of that notion. I feel like the people team should be part of the business, not apart from it. And that means being transparent about what we're doing, how we're doing it, sharing our metrics and data, bringing people into the conversation around how do we want to get things done? How do we want to proceed? Treating people like adults. Even our performance management, we never talked about this, but even our performance management process, we're in the middle of redoing that as well from an annual, kind of more of an annual type process with the rating to more of a quarterly conversation and a connection between the manager and the team member so they can have a conversation about their goals and their performance and their career development rather than make it this big annual event. So it's things like that to question everything about why we do what we do and how to make it better for our team members.
Yeah. On that point, I can't imagine having an annual review in a startup environment in any environment, but it's the things are moving so fast. You need to be speaking, you know, daily, let alone, you know, yearly, at the minimum of kind of what you've mentioned as well. But it seems almost crazy that we used to do that.
A lot of people still do, because then you only have to think about it once a year, and that's easier for a lot of people.
But then you dread it once a year, right? Once a year you go, oh no, that's coming up again. And the employee, both manager and employer, like, oh, not again. And it becomes this big, you know, it's a big stress. And even HR leaders in the past are like, Chris, we're doing it. I'm doing my annual reviews. I'll speak to you in 3 months. And it used to be such a strain.
Right. I'm much more about let's set our goals and check in on our goals on a regular basis and give real-time feedback.
Exactly.
Good managers do this on a weekly basis, daily basis with their people. But part of our job is to make sure we have some kind of system to make sure the people who don't naturally do that have some touch points to do those things.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I'm going to jump into our quick fire round, which I do with all of the guests. So I'm going to ask you, and this is not planned, so I know you, so everyone's listening. Don't tell anyone. So I'm going to ask you five questions. So the first question is, what was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior HR executive?
Confidence in myself.
Yeah, I think we all can relate to that one as well. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
Never run away from a job, always run to one.
That's a very good way of framing it as well. Fantastic. What's some online resources or books? Obviously, your own book. We'll put that in the comment. It's right there. That was very timely. Apart from your own book, which obviously we'll link in the comments for everyone as well. What other some other sort of online resources or books do you would recommend?
I guess it depends on for what. I think if you want to sort of look at different models and improve your mind, there's a lot of different HR books out there you can read and business books. Yeah, I'm a fan of Lencioni. I like Crucial Conversations. I thought Patty McCord's book was really good. I think if you're looking for tactical, practical advice, Zenefits, who I do some advising for, actually has a great website with handbooks and things like that that you can tips and tools, how do you start a DEI program, things like that, like great tips and tools and resources. So I actually am familiar with their stuff, so I think it's high quality. I recommend that as
Fantastic.
well.
There's plenty out there as well. So we'll link that all in the comments for everyone. And then, we kind of asked this already, but, what's one parting piece of advice you'd give to other HR leaders that are on their way on their career journey to where you are now? If you could look back and give yourself some advice, what advice would you give yourself?
Yeah, I taught HR classes at San Francisco State for almost 10 years because I this is the part I love. And I think it's don't be afraid to admit what you don't know. It's okay to not know everything. It's okay to say, let me look that up. I'm not sure. That doesn't diminish you in any way. No one knows everything. The key is to just know enough to know what you don't know.
And once you get to that point, you can start really moving, right? When you can start asking for help, saying you don't know, it really can rally people around you, but also propel you forward. Otherwise, you kind of just get stuck, right?
And it makes you better. You learn. If you don't know
Exactly.
things and then you can find a way to learn them, you're going to be that much smarter and better at your job.
Fantastic. And then last thing, where can people connect with you if they want to reach out, say hi, grab a copy of the book? Where's the best place?
LinkedIn is great, or tracy@stockx.com.
Fantastic. And the book's on Amazon, right? For anyone who
It
wants
is.
to grab a copy. And I think there's already a link in the comments. For anyone listening, make sure you go grab a coffee. Well, look, thanks for coming on the show. And I am generally really excited about the organization, and I can see your passion for the work that you do. And the fact that my friends and family members are coming to me saying, check out this company, that says it all already. And we're speaking. So congratulations to you and the team, and keep up the amazing work. I definitely would love to have a tour of the UK, the UK site. That would be fascinating
We'll make it happen.
to see that as well. And but apart from that, enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll see you again soon. All right. See ya.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Thanks. Bye.